Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's MALDEF briefing on DACA court case. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session, and you may register to ask a question by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. I will be standing by if you should need audio assistance, and it is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Thomas Sines, President and General Counsel of MALDEF. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon and good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. As you all are aware, a court hearing was held earlier today in Houston, Texas, in the case of Texas versus United States. That is a case that was filed by the state of Texas and now including eight other states challenging the legality of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals initiative. As you all are aware, DACA was commenced in 2012 by the Obama administration through an exercise of its executive prosecutorial discretion. Since that 2012 initiation, DACA has provided protection from removal and work authorization to over 750,000 young immigrants to the United States. Today, over 600,000 still hold DACA and are able to avail themselves of the legal right to work. Today's hearing is potentially the culmination of a case that was filed by the state of Texas after numerous other cases nationwide were filed challenging the Trump administration's indications through then Attorney General Jeff Sessions that it would seek to end the DACA initiative. As you know, those cases filed before this case recently went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in June of this year, a majority of the court concluded that the Trump administration could not, at this point, end DACA. The reasons that the Supreme Court majority reached that conclusion was despite Jeff Sessions' indication that he believed and had concluded that DACA was unlawful, nonetheless, the Supreme Court majority concluded that the Trump administration erred by failing to separate protection from removal and work authorization, and to analyze each, and by failing to take into account the reliance interest, important reliance interest, built up over time since the DACA initiative was implemented in 2012. More recently, as you are all aware, a federal court in New York, on remand of that case from the Supreme Court, ordered the Trump administration to reinstate DACA, not just for those who are seeking renewal, which comes up every 2 years, but also for new applicants as well. And at this point in time, this outgoing Trump administration is accepting both new and renewal applications for DACA and processing them. Therefore, the nation's attention on this issue has turned to the case in Texas that held its argument today. At issue were competing motions for summary judgment or competing motions to have the case resolved before trial. MALDEF represents interveners to defend DACA. We intervened on behalf of 22 DACA recipients out of a concern that has proven true that the Trump administration would not present a vigorous defense of DACA. We were subsequently joined by the state of New Jersey in intervening to help to defend DACA. Shortly, you'll hear some of the issues that were argued today, but it's important to note that we did not get a decision from Judge Hainan today, and as in every federal court proceeding, we do not know when Judge Hainan will issue his decision. That is entirely at the discretion of the judge. We do know that the issue of summary judgment has been separated in some respects from the issue of a remedy, which is to say, even if Judge Hainan concludes that the state of Texas and other plaintiffs should be granted summary judgment by concluding that DACA, first of all, that the state of Texas and other plaintiffs have standing, a sufficient injury to bring the case, and second, that DACA is an unlawful exercise of presidential authority. Judge Hainan could reach that conclusion and still not determine what the remedy is. There was discussion today about what an appropriate remedy might be. So it is important to separate the merits of the case, which includes the issue of the all-important issue of standing, from the issue of what the remedial order would be depending on the outcome on the merits of the case. It's important to note that DACA has not only benefited the over 500,000 who currently hold it, but has benefited the entire nation by ensuring that young immigrants who, by and large, grew up here, were educated here, and in most cases have gone on to higher education, are able to use their education to provide important services in the workplace. They include, for example, during this pandemic, many who are on the front lines in healthcare, providing services to those who are afflicted by COVID-19. They also include many teachers in our classrooms who are now engaged in creative work to ensure that in this pandemic and under distance learning, that children can still be provided the education that they need. It is now my pleasure to turn it over to MALDEF's lead counsel in representing those intervener defendant DACA recipients, our vice president of litigation, who was in court today in Houston arguing in the case. Nina Perales. Nina.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, everybody, for joining the call. I understand that the audio from the court hearing was less than perfect, and so what I figured I would do is give you a quick rundown of the positions of the different parties in today's hearing, and then, you know, we can go from there. So today's hearing started off with my argument regarding some of the evidence that Texas put forward in its case, and arguing to the judge that that evidence should be excluded because it was unreliable, and the experts that they were putting forward didn't have the sufficient knowledge or methodology. This highlighted one large aspect of the hearing today, which was our position that Texas really hasn't put forward facts to support its argument around DACA and its argument that DACA is illegal. We then moved to our motion that the case be decided on summary judgment, and these are our motion being in defense of DACA, that the case should be decided by being dismissed because the states that are challenging DACA have shown no harm flowing from DACA. And because the states have no harm, they have no standing to sue. And so that was our motion for summary judgment, that was argued by our co-counsel, Douglas Hallward Dreemeyer from Ropes and Gray. And Mr. Hallward Dreemeyer pointed out that the states haven't really been able to point to any harm that flows from having DACA recipients living in their state, not costs related to any social services and no labor market harms as well. Then the hearing moved on to Texas's motion for summary judgment. And in Texas's motion for summary judgment, Texas and the other states are asking the judge to declare that DACA is unlawful for three main reasons. First, that it is too significant a program not to have been instituted through federal regulations. So the argument number one was that DACA required that it be created through federal regulations and not simply the 2012 memo by DHS. The second argument that Texas has is that because DACA gives deferred action to so many people, and then flowing from that work authorization, that DACA is unlawful because it's inconsistent with current immigration law. And finally, Texas and the other states argued that through DACA, the president, when DACA is in effect, is not upholding immigration law, is not following the law. And so Texas put forward those arguments, and then we argued in response that DACA did not require regulations and that DACA is consistent with immigration law because immigration law allows the Department of Homeland Security to exercise discretion with respect to low priority individuals And through the DACA process, people can step forward and they can have a background check and demonstrate that they meet criteria for being low priority and that this is very consistent with how the immigration system works in the United States. The judge asked the Department of Justice, which is the Trump administration, to explain what its position is in the case, and lawyers from the Department of Justice said that they were still considering questions around DACA and what to do for next steps in DACA, but that it was their current position that DACA was unlawful and needed to be wound down. At the very end of the hearing, the judge took everybody's position on what should happen if he finds that DACA is unlawful. He wanted to hear the party's recommendations for what to do in that instance. And I want to stress to everybody that there is no party in this case that says DACA should end immediately. Even the plaintiff states that are challenging DACA have said that there should be some kind of slow wind down, or that the court should set aside the DACA memo, but then stay his order, essentially postpone his order for, and Texas suggested, a period of 2 years to allow the case to go through the appellate process. And I just want to be absolutely clear with everybody on the call that this means that there is nobody in this case who is asking for an immediate instant end to deferred action under DACA, to the work authorization that DACA recipients, many currently have. And so now we will wait for the court's decision and see where we go from there.
Thank you, Nina. In a moment, we'll open to questions. I simply want to end by reminding everyone that there is nothing that compelled the state of Texas or the other plaintiff states to file this lawsuit or to continue to pursue it. Indeed, it is in great tension. It's our view that, on balance, having DACA recipients is a benefit to all of the states that they in which they reside. Folks with work authorization who are educated are able to obtain employment and to contribute to our economy in multiple ways through that participation in the workforce. So it's important to note that the state of Texas is only joined by 8 states in this case. Texas's previous challenge to the predecessor, in the predecessor case of Texas versus United States, which challenged a subsequent 2014 announced initiative called DAPA, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, and the expansion of DACA, but which never was implemented because of that lawsuit. But that lawsuit included over 24 states challenging the expansion of DACA and the new DAPA initiative. In this case, Texas is joined by a much smaller cohort of states, none of whom were compelled to either bring or continue this lawsuit. And of course, it's important to note, as you are all aware, that all of this takes place in the context of an upcoming change in presidential administration that is now less than 30 days away. Based on indications from President-elect Joe Biden, we can expect that a new administration will address the DACA initiative by looking to implement its own policy and or practice that would address this cohort of immigrants. President-elect Biden has recognized the important contributions that this cohort of immigrants continue to make to our country. And we will now open up to questions.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touchtone phone. Again, to ask a question today, please press the star and 1. We will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. We have a question from Julian Aguilar from the Texas Tribune. Please go ahead.
Hello, y'all. Good afternoon, and thanks for having this. Unfortunately, the audio was pretty terrible, so we didn't want to make a mistake in writing up the story based on that. But Ms. Bedones, can you sort of elaborate on the, there was a lot of talk on the, I think it was advanced parole and the work authorization. Can you just kind of discuss what the state's argument was with respect to those two initiatives in DACA a little bit more and why that was such a crux of their argument?
Yes, certainly. So DACA is in its central aspect, and this was explained by the Supreme Court in the Regents' decision in June when the Supreme Court was dealing with DACA rescission. Supreme Court explained that the centerpiece of DACA is that the government decides that an individual is a low priority and chooses to defer removing that person, right? That's the centerpiece of DACA, and it was referred to by the Supreme Court as forbearance from removal. So in addition to that component of DACA, forbearance from removal, what happens under separate federal regulations is that people who are in deferred action are eligible for work authorization. These work authorization regulations are from the 1980s. They long predate DACA. They just say if you have deferred action, you can apply, and if you can show that you need it, you can get work authorization. There's another federal law, another federal statute that's also completely separate from DACA that says that any undocumented person in the United States can apply for special permission to leave the United States for an urgent humanitarian reason and come back in. And that also, that law has been around for a long time before DACA. What Texas was arguing is that because DACA recipients get forbearance and can also apply for work authorization and even travel outside and back into the United States, that DACA wasn't simply forbearance, but it was something closer to almost an immigration status, and that rendered it illegal. And the reason that we spent so much time talking about it is that, in our view, the plaintiffs have gotten this wrong throughout the whole case, because work authorization and advanced parole flow from different parts of the immigration law. They're not connected to DACA. It is not DACA that makes you eligible for work authorization. It isn't DACA that makes you eligible for advanced parole. Those things pre-existed DACA and happen to be connected in that anybody can apply for advanced parole who's undocumented in the United States. The statute says any person. And then work authorization, of course, flows from these 1980s regulations. So there was a lot of discussion about that today because it's really related to how Texas wants to portray DACA as an expansive benefits-granting program versus those of us who are defending DACA who are pointing out, and even the Supreme Court recognized, that DACA is forbearance from removal. And then these other things that Texas is pointing at flow from other parts of immigration law.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for walking me through that. I appreciate it.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one. We will take our next question from Maria Sanchetti from The Washington Post. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for having this. I appreciate it. I'm sorry I was slightly late, so if I miss this, I apologize. But I wanted to ask, how quickly do you think the judge will rule? Does he have a certain amount of time to rule?
No, Maria. The judge is at his discretion, however long he decides he needs to review the arguments put before him and to create a decision in whatever form he chooses, whether that's a published decision, which a district court can do at his option, or an unpublished shorter order, however he chooses to move forward. But I would just like to emphasize that he could move forward with a decision on the merits of summary judgment without yet moving forward on remedy and ask for further argument in writing and potentially in person about the issue of remedy, even if he were to decide that the plaintiffs should prevail on the merits of the case?
Is it that he could, I mean, he could, you know, I mean, just he probably won't, but I mean, he could rule tomorrow or he could, you know, call another hearing on remedy or something. He has different options.
Yes, it's at the judge's discretion how he chooses and when he chooses to issue a decision.
Okay, and I'm sorry, just may I have one quick follow-up to that? So, I mean, we know what he signaled in the past, and, you know, I would never assume how he's going to rule, but if he does strike down DACA, you know, what happens next?
So that's the point I'm emphasizing. There is a difference between his concluding that DACA is unlawful if he reaches that decision and what happens next. That's the remedy. What will he order the federal government to do if he concludes that DACA is unlawful? As Nina has indicated during the hearing, it's quite clear that no one on any side of the case would like to see DACA ended immediately and withdrawn from all of those who currently have that protection. So what
that,
happens
yeah.
is
yeah,
really
I'm sorry. Say he offers an orderly wind down of 2 years or 3 years or something. What would you all do next?
Well, of course,
Go ahead, Tom.
We have the option of filing an appeal to the Fifth Circuit, but as I mentioned previously, there will be a new administration in place, and how the administration responds to such a decision is critically important. The new administration could decide that whatever flaws Judge Hainan identifies in the legality of 2012 DACA can be remedied through some new initiative put forward by the administration. So there are two things going on. One, what's going on in court, and that could lead to an appeal to the Fifth Circuit in the first course, and what's going on when a new administration that is more supportive of DACA recipients is in place. Nina, did you want to add something?
I just want to emphasize something that Tom is saying, which is that there is absolutely no way to know, one, when the judge is going to issue a ruling, and two, what the judge is going to conclude. So, you know, you can present a hypothetical in your question, but by answering those hypotheticals, we are not endorsing or suggesting that any particular outcome is going to come out of this case. It is truly up to Judge Hainan here. His past rulings don't necessarily dictate how he is approaching this case. And I'll share with you something that the judge said at the end of the hearing, which is that there had been some discussion about his previous ruling with respect to an earlier initiative called, earlier litigated initiative called DAPA, D-A-P-A, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans. And Judge Hainan did issue a ruling in the DAPA case, finding that he thought that it was unlawful because it should have been promulgated through regulations. Judge Hainan today pointed out that the DAPA case is quite different from the DACA case, and in part because the DAPA never went into effect. And here we have an initiative, DACA, which has been in effect for 8 years. And the judge is very aware of the differences between things that he's ruled on before and what he has in front of him now.
Thank you, Nina. Are there any more questions?
We have one more question from Mimi Dwyer from Reuters News. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing this. I just wanted to clarify one point that came up today when Judge Hainan asked defendants about what remedies they might want. I think the attorney representing New Jersey said something about sending DACA or the policy back to the agency, and I wasn't sure exactly what that meant, if you were able to clarify that.
Sure. At that point, the judge was asking each party, So when we were talking about remand with no without vacating the memo, that was the position of the defendant intervener. So those of us who have come into the case to defend DACA, as opposed to the defendants who are is the Trump administration. So with respect to our position, the defendant interveners, that portion of the argument was shared with New Jersey. And what we were saying was that the proper remedy, if the judge finds a legal problem with DACA, is to send the issue back to the Department of Homeland Security to try to remedy whatever the judge thinks might be wrong with DACA without setting aside the DACA memo itself, but essentially sending it back to DHS so that DHS would have a chance to cure any of the legal problems that the judge found. Texas responded that it wanted the DACA memo set aside or invalidated. But there is another approach, which is a very common approach in cases involving agencies, which is to send the issue back to the agency and say the judge has found certain problems with legality and that the agency should take another shot at it.
The understanding being by the time it got to DHS, we'd likely, you know, be in a new administration.
Maybe. I mean, right now, DHS is in the middle of trying to figure out what to do about DACA anyway, because of its attempted rescission and then being told it couldn't rescind and then being told it needs to figure out what it wants to do. So the Supreme Court has already told DHS to try to figure out what to do. Given that that's what's going on with DACA, it makes the most sense that if Judge Hainan finds something concerning with respect to DACA and legality, that he then tell the agency to deal with that as part of its ongoing process. So you don't even have to look forward to the next administration to understand that kind of the posture of DACA right now is that DHS is currently deciding what to do about it.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Are there any more questions?
We do not have any further questions at this time.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us. We appreciate your attention and coverage to this important issue, and we look forward to following up once we have any further indication from Judge Hainan of actions he will take in the case of Texas versus United States. Have a good evening, everyone.